So far, Lee Oswald has only been accused of killing a Dallas policeman. As far as the assassination is concerned, he is described only as a prime suspect. He has denied any knowledge of the assassination of the president. Although he once actually turned in his American passport in Moscow, it's not known whether he actually became a Russian citizen. His wife is known to be Russian-born. They most recently lived in a rooming house in Dallas.
The guest for this episode of Orphan Radio is Peter Savodnik. He has a new book out called The Interloper. It's about Lee Harvey Oswald and his time inside the Soviet Union.
The main reason I was interested in the book is because I feel like the general public doesn't really know that Lee Harvey Oswald defected to Russia as a young man. Have you found that as you've been promoting the book?
Yeah, I think that in general, people know very little about Oswald. Certainly, very few people know that he spent any time in the Soviet Union. I think that's because we tend to regard Oswald as this shadowy, amorphous figure, when in fact he is utterly knowable.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the title of the book, The Interloper?
Sure. Oswald's life is a series of trespassings or interlopings, attempts to break into somewhere new and forge a home for himself, some sense of rootedness or permanence. And with each attempt and with each failure, the sense of alienation and the need to interlope or to trespass ratchets up. And the final, or I should say the penultimate interloping, is his journey to the Soviet Union, which of course then is a failure and which is followed by the return to the United States and the assassination of the president.
So what can you talk about his background a little bit, and what was it about, specifically about his background and his experiences, that made him want to defect to Russia at such a young age?
I think that the important thing to bear in mind about Oswald is that his father died 2 months before he was born. He had a crazy, needy, often very hurtful mother. And from early adolescence, makes it very clear that he is seeking some kind of structure, some kind of place to belong to, something to escape to. And there is this kind of casting about that sets in. And there's an obvious desire for some kind of male controlling authority. The Marines is not an accident. And, of course, the Soviet Union, with its militancy, its heavy-handed rhetoric about revolution and tearing down the capitalist order, also has a very patriarchal, very male undertone to it. And all of this is part of Oswald trying to find somewhere bigger than him, something bigger than him to situate himself.
Mm-hmm. So when he got there, what was his life like? What was once he ended up in Russia for a few years?
Well, he gets there, and in the very beginning, they don't really know what to do with him. Then, after they sort through a few things and they make him wait for a while, they ship him off to Minsk. And in the beginning, for the first 6 months or so, he's something of a celebrity, and he enjoys that a great deal. He achieves something that he has never had in the United States, which is a community, people who actually have an interest in him and who want to do things with him, who want to socialize with him. After this initial 6 to 8 month period, his interest, his feelings of closeness with his new home begin to weaken, and he becomes increasingly disillusioned. And this is greatly exacerbated in early 1961 when he breaks with when his relationship with Ella Grumman ends after she says no to his marriage proposal. Mm-hmm. And it's after that point that he begins to take concrete steps to extricate himself from Minsk.
When he ends up back in the U.S., how had the country changed, and, like, you know, was it kind of a shock for him when he got back?
I don't think that Oswald perhaps or I don't think that Oswald picked up on any changes that may have happened, although you're right, and as I point out in the book, profound changes had taken place, the election of the new president and the new thinking about America's place in the world and a new kind of understanding of America in a way. But I'm not sure that Oswald was necessarily cognizant of all that. I think that Oswald is a function of a lot of those forces to some extent, but I don't think that he necessarily recognized them.
I wanted to ask you about how you researched the book a little bit, and I know one of the things you used were his diaries and some of his letters. What did his writings reveal to you?
So there are a lot of things about Oswald's writings, his diary entries, his letters, his political fragments that are fascinating. One, the most obvious thing, he had what nowadays we probably call dyslexia, and the quality of his writing varies widely. There are times in some of his writings where he actually sounds rather coherent, but then there are times where he's utterly incoherent. Mm-hmm. He often weirdly confuses Cyrillic characters or inserts, I should say, Cyrillic characters into English words or text. So there's that, the sort of technical matter of his writing and his thinking. The other thing is that when it comes to the United States, Oswald has this almost kind of weirdly kind of philosophical approach or disposition. He saw a great deal of America, but he never seemed to pick up on or observe details, concrete details. He always seemed to think in terms of or write in terms of big abstract notions or principles, which is very strange. There's something more foreign about his approach to the United States. Mm-hmm. It's that he viewed everything from afar and always through this very, very hostile prism. So, in a way, his writing reflects his own sense of alienation or detachment from America.
What was his life like when he came back to the U.S.? I mean, I know it was a short period of time, but up until the day that he shot the president, what was his life like back in the U.S.?
Frenzied, peripatetic, devoid of any kind of constancy or sense of purpose. Oswald returns to the United States, and he immediately resumes the kind of rootlessness, or I should say that he resumes this very sad path that he had been on, looking for some kind of place to fit into, looking for some kind of home to build. And, of course, he failed before, he failed again. And he pretty quickly, I think, comes to the realization that he probably made a mistake in leaving the Soviet Union. And he says as much to Marina. And he talks a lot about wanting to go back and thinking about coming back. And, of course, towards the very end, he goes down to Mexico City and attempts to get a visa to Cuba and or the Soviet Union. So the whole 17-month period from the return to the United States to the assassination, it just represents a kind of much more hairy, much more intense replication of, or continuation, I should say, of where he had been prior to his departure.
After doing all this research and writing the book and everything, is there any doubt in your mind that he did not act alone?
No.
I mean, what do you think of the... Do you think the conspiracy theories are just all a bunch of garbage, basically?
Yes, the conspiracy theories have no interest, or just the conspiracy theorists have no interest in actually getting to the bottom of anything. Mm-hmm. The conspiracy theorists have an interest in buttressing some idea of America as inherently corrupt or bankrupt or rotten. That is, there is a great deal of bad faith in all the conspiracy theorizing. Look, there are more than 5 million pages of documents in the U.S. National Archives Kennedy assassination file. That's like looking at a very, very crowded nighttime sky and identifying certain patterns. You can you can piece together any conspiracy theory you like, because there are enough different data points in there. But if you take into account all of the data, you can't make sense of any of the conspiracy theories. And that is especially true when one takes into account Oswald, his psychology, his biography, the person he was, and treats him not as some cog in a detective story, but as a three-dimensional character.
I wanted to back up a little bit and ask you about, I know an article that you wrote in the past was kind of an investigative piece on the chessboard killer in Russia. And for people who aren't familiar with that, can you talk a little bit about that story?
Sure. Petushkin murdered, I forget the exact number, in the 40s or 50s, if not more, mostly men in this park, Petushkin Park, in this peripheral neighborhood in Moscow. And usually would lure men who were sort of down and out into the forest where they would drink, and then he would whack them over the head and proceed to stab them or shove things into their skull and push them down these big pipes.
So was writing that story, you were living over there at that time?
I was, yes.
And so how was that to kind of navigate that world in Russia over there? Like the kind of underbelly of it, I guess.
It was very exciting. It was challenging, but it was very fulfilling. It was investigative reporting.
Mm-hmm. And then the last question I had for you was, I know you lived over there for a while. What is day-to-day life like over there for people who have never and probably will never ever get to experience that?
Well, it depends where you are. Moscow is a world apart from the rest of Russia, and life there is substantially better, or richer, faster, more modern and Western than elsewhere in Russia. When you leave Moscow and you get into the real Russia, life is slower, but it's also nastier, more British and shorter. There is a great deal of alcoholism and dilapidation and sort of general backwardness. As an expatriate reporter in Russia, life is endlessly fascinating because you have a sort of limitless cache of stories to report. And Russia poses this kind of fascinating, almost philosophical challenge to the West, which makes for great material. It makes for a great series of stories to write. Would I want to live there forever, or do Russians want to live there? That's another matter altogether.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for taking the time to do this. I'm sure you have a million interviews to do this week.
Thank you so much.
Now, very quickly, back to Dallas Police Headquarters for a videotaped live camera scene of Lee Oswald as he was brought into another room for questioning.
All right. People have given me a hearing without legal representation or anything.
Did you shoot the president?
I didn't shoot anybody, no, sir.
You just heard Oswald, who said he did not shoot anybody.